Welcome back to episode, I think, 291. Joe, how you doing?
I'm just fine, Tim. How are you doing?
Not too bad. Still alive. Can't complain.
Oh, there you go.
So, still kicking. Occasionally screaming. Well, a lot happened since we last spoke, of course. The much rumored indictment of Donald Trump occurred. This is from the DA in Manhattan. Alvin Bragg, Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg. Apparently he's got nothing better to do up in New York because they got crime so under control up there. And I guess he's worried about, interpreting campaign finance law. So I don't know what legally, I don't know what to make of it. It just shows you can just indict anything, right? A ham sandwich or anything for that matter, or even a ham actor like Donald Trump. They indicted him. I think it was like false document crime, which is kind of a process crime, if I understand, meaning has to be in pursuit or of another crime. But nevertheless, they're able to interpret the law in such a way. I don't think even bother in citing a law. They just claim that he filed false documents in regards to these payments to porn actress Stormy Daniels. $130,000 payment was made back in 2016, supposedly hush money. She denied ever having a relationship with Donald Trump. Nevertheless, she took the money and still proceeded to talk about it. She's contradicted herself on this issue. Whether or not there was anything going on, I suspect there was, but there may not have been. I don't know. It's pretty immaterial because it's not really a campaign finance issue that they're interpreting it as that, because they're saying it was a campaign finance contribution, wasn't filed properly. But then again, if it's a payment made to cover up an affair, to prevent an embarrassing thing going public, that certainly is a private matter. These things aren't explicitly illegal anyway. A non-disclosure agreement happens all the time. Nor is it an admission of guilt, because these things are done for political reasons or financial reasons, that people are cutting their losses. But nevertheless, this is decided, for some reason or another, Alvin Bragg, who initially backed away from this last year, has decided to go full throttle on this and try to, convict Donald Trump on this. Of course, it's Manhattan jury, so who knows what will happen. It's interesting because the Florida governor, where Donald Trump lives, of course, he lives in Florida, Mar-a-Lago, Ron DeSantis, who's considered a presidential candidate himself in 2024, has said he would not transfer Donald Trump, extradite him to New York if a request was made. This, from what I understand, this is not a federal case. It's a state case. The FEC, I think, came down several years ago. At least the Justice Department, FEC, ruled that it was not a crime. Nevertheless, Donald Trump now is going to be indicted. He's supposed to surrender tomorrow. At least that's what's expected. If I were him, I wouldn't surrender. Because it's an absurd case. But it's kind of a distraction. I was reading Ann Coulter piece about it. It says almost if Donald Trump is working in cahoots with the mainstream media to keep him in the news. And there's a lot else going on. I was reading about how Brazil has agreed with China not to use dollars in international transactions, which is a blow to the U.S. dollar's reserve status, which can have a profound effect on the U.S. economy and everyone's standard of living. It represents a shift in global power that's going on. So that's what we have. We're supposed to be all concerned with Donald Trump. Donald Trump decried it as a weaponization of the judicial system, which it is. It's an abuse of the judicial system, the legal system, for political reasons. It's a naked abuse of that system. But of course, we have a lot of people who have already been victimized by the weaponized judicial system. We have all the January 6th protesters, hundreds have been in jail. I think close to 1,000 have been indicted. They're talking about indicting 1,000 more. We have the Douglas Mackey case. He was convicted just this past week of interfering with elections by posting a satirical meme on Twitter, which would seem to violate the First Amendment. In pursuit of protecting the sacred right to vote, the Biden Justice Department is assaulting the First Amendment. But he can go away from as long as 10 years for posting that satirical meme, even though I think an almost identical one was posted by a lady, what was her name, Chong, or an Asian lady, doing the same thing, because she hasn't yet to be prosecuted or indicted by the Justice Department for that. So it's obviously it's a selective prosecution, but apparently in today's day and age, telling a joke or being satirical about the regime can get you thrown in jail, which evidently it has. It's a violation of the First Amendment. And maybe overturned on appeal, a good chance that it will, because this does seem to violate the clear First Amendment right to free speech. His satire was not a violation of the Brandenburg standard. The federal government failed to produce anyone who didn't vote or whose vote was prevented by Douglas Mackey's tweet. And that's what the law, I think, actually requires. You have to have actually physically prevent someone from voting. It was passed long ago, apparently, to enable blacks in the South to vote. So it's an abuse of that law, of course. So that's what we have in the legal frontier, what's going on, you know, weaponization of the judicial system. Anything to say on that?
Well, God almighty. The whole thing just feels like a really poorly written porn movie. You have... The tweet, I think his name was Vaughn.
Ricky Vaughn was his, that's a character in a movie, Charlie right. Sheen's character in Major League. So that was his,
his handle.
Yeah.
You know, the caption that he was convicted was as follows. It says, avoid the line, vote from home, text Hillary to 59925. Vote for Hillary and be part of history. Now, the idea is that he was parodying the way that they were stuffing the ballot box,
right,
with all of the mail-in ballots, and he was, the implication of his satire is that, at least to the prosecution, is that people would actually do this because they are so stupid that they would not see this as a satire and would literally mechanically just cast their vote as a text to Hillary. Okay. Mm-hmm. So they couldn't find a single person this dumb. This would suggest that on, you know, habeas corpus grounds, they don't really have a lot to go on. This is just it's a diminishing of the sense of the First Amendment, particularly for white males, particularly for Republican, voters and satirists. I mean, if this actually holds up, this will take all humor basically out of the political world, because there's almost no humor that doesn't have an edge of satire that is associated with it. It's hard to make a joke that, you know, doesn't and somehow mock something, and also that couldn't be by these standards seen as an incitement for poor behavior, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just absolutely open-ended.
Well, no sense. So, they say like interfering with an election. Well, of course, you can arguably say anytime you make a point or argument or engage in any debate, you're interfering with election to the extent that you're in trying to influence someone's behavior or opinion or where they how they see things. So Chris Humer's what does that mean, interfering with
right election? And because you know you often sophistries use,
yeah,
you know, you can simply attack almost every single political position with this legal structure. And so it's, to me, it's a completely theatrical production. I mean, it has teeth, it's vicious, and its purpose is just to take the sense of the First Amendment away from Americans, basically. This is
the chilling effect it will have, because
exactly, and that's since it's so ridiculous, that is exactly what it is intended to do, and probably will. In fact, you'll be able to find, as opposed to not ever being able to find anyone who would be stupid enough to not vote or to vote using their text feature on their iPhone, you will find people who, if this goes forward, will be intimidated to speak out against and particularly to use satire humor in a political sense. So it's just, you know, it's a, it's just a, another step toward a mental a dictatorship, right? Where, you know, everyone is just intimidated right to the point where they're just frozen in place. And then as far as the Trump indictment, I mean, I don't know if you read it, it's just the most poorly written thing I've ever seen in my life. It makes absolutely no sense. There's not even a train of thought you can follow really in the thing. And I suspect Trump will be convicted.
it's a New Manhattan jury.
Yeah, I think that, you know, we really might be in a theatrical porn movie. I have said, you know, for a long time, I think we haven't seen the last of Stormy Daniels. And I would be amazed if they don't have some kind of video, you know, just any sort of picture whatsoever. That will be the money shot, to use an expression, in terms of this whole thing. So what is the purpose of this? I mean, why would they, you know, bother with something this ridiculous? It in terms of the polls, Trump got an enormous boost, mm-hmm. right? So just as a political strategy, it's completely stupid. But, you know, you have to look beyond that into what really is the purpose of these things. And these are, as I see them, just psychological constructions. And here, this will promote pornography. I mean, she is a porn star.
It's more of that nonsense. Same with the Clinton and Lewinsky thing.
Everyone basically is in a porn movie, including the President of the United States. So this is, you know, the ultimate purpose of this. It's just a way to, you know, do as thou wilt is the whole of the law, to quote Aleister Crowley. And so, you know, this is what is being represented to the public here, that if you are an honest married couple trying to be faithful and raise a family, you are just preposterous. You don't fit into the modern TikTok world, which is a porn world. It's a porn mm-hmm. movie. And so that's really the message of this. And, you know, it's a sad thing because, you know, you have to think about like a, you know, a first grader, right? Say a first grader from a family that has a Christian background. Let's just take this as a, you know, a type of a child. Now, this child is obviously hearing things about the transgender movement. Mm-hmm. Every public school, it's a meme. It just can't be avoided. So this is being presented to him as possibly a normal version of reality. We'll talk about this later, but I'm just talking about the mind of like a six-year-old. And then this comes along where, well, what is the former president up to? Well, he's been in this porn movie and, you know, Stormy Daniels. So this is just a way to shatter the development of children, to increase the purent, you know, the pornographic attraction of young males, and to just continually hammer away at the sexual restraint and delayed gratification that is absolutely necessary for the production of families, children, and of course is the way that the best life can be obtained for a human. But all of that has been attacked ever since the authoritarian personality and even before. And so, you know, you just have to be aware that you're in a pornographic environment, deliberately constructed environment where Eros, to use an expression, it's pornography, is being presented, and is presented for this very specific purpose. Mm-hmm. It is to take away the idea that, you know, sexual restraint and delayed gratification and romance and lasting relationships, that these things are really the direction that you should be heading into as a human being. The direction, you know, that's a bad decision. Where you want to go is listen to the person doing, transvestite story hour. You know, what is that person's sexual perspective? What does your president say about transvestites? You know, we'll talk about Biden's quote. What is Trump? You know, he pretends to be, you know, like a family man, but he's in a porn movie, for heaven's sake. So these are, you know, these are all, in my opinion, constructed theatrical events, and they're all just for the purpose of shattering the mind of the European. Yeah, it's as simple as that.
Yeah, and I guess you could say a certain Rubicon's been crossed, because now any local DA can find something and press charges against the politician. I don't know if this will happen, but I can imagine some, you know, entrepreneurial DA in Little Rock bringing charges against Clinton because all the, you know, the non-disclosure agreements that he has signed over the years.
I mean, if it's tit for tat, it's just the end of the republic.
Yeah,
that's all there is to it. I mean, this is such an obvious and stupid charge. If they convict him, the response from the Republicans could easily be, okay, that's fine. We're just going to take the areas of the republic that we have control over, and we're just going to incarcerate Democratic. I mean, God knows, you know, I mean, how hard would it be to find dirt on these people?
Yeah.
So we're going to start throwing them in jail. Then you have no political system, because a political system is kind of like, well, it's sort of like a marriage, Tim. It requires that both sides have some agreed upon and operative trust between, you know, how the behavior
yes.
is supposed to be, right? If that goes out the window, if it just becomes a legal free for all, then there is no republic, and you're really just on your mean. Well, I mean, the military will have to step in.
Yeah, what's really happened here, which would happen in Rome, that's where I became a dictatorship after, because the customs of the republic were no longer respected, because the various factions, you know, various factions and their political ambitions. But like Nancy Pelosi, she came out with a statement that now Trump had our opportunity to prove himself innocent. It's like,
I know, right? That was
Nancy, funny. You write laws, right? Right. Well, allegedly, right? Whatever. That's not the way the system's supposed to work. But yeah, I've no doubt they'll find 12 people in Manhattan who just, you know, who will convict Trump of being Orange Man bad. And that's pretty much what the indictment is. And there's no, you know, and again, this whole, it's Trump derangement syndrome. People can't really explain logically or rationally why they hate Trump, nor can they explain why they like Trump.
They couldn't explain what the actual felony aspect of this behavior
yes.
is.
Yes, it's a misdemeanor. Statute of limitations.
They couldn't possibly do it. So it's like you say, it's Orange Man bad in a porn movie. And mm-hmm. that's what that we're going to be subjected to. One hopes that somewhere in the system there is a, you know, a sane and wise person. Well,
at the same time, isn't there a congressional investigation into millions of dollars of payments to the Biden family from various interests sure. in China and all throughout the world, and not to mention what's happened in Ukraine regarding Biden family and the war that his administration started? You know, it's like no interest in that. But this is a sign that those people who are entrusted to enforce the law, they don't have any sense of judgment or discretion or limitation, which means they're not even good tyrants, because even tyrants know when to stop. Like Merrick Garland, the FBI is now, most people know that FBI is a naked political body. It's not, doesn't have the pretense of law. No one takes it seriously. No one trusts it, really. It may, you may agree with it politically, you know, right now, but you don't really trust it as a, you know, as a objective law enforcement, constitutionally respecting institution. The abuses under Merrick Garland now, you know, like regarding Mark Houck, that case was so bad. It's just an abuse of power, and you know, heads should roll for that. You know, there should be a congressional investigation. People should lose their job. They should go to jail for that abuse of power, because they're abusing this system. It's, you know, whatever. If you're going to have prosecutors, you're going to have these law enforcement agencies, you know, with $20 billion budgets, and they're going to have to be entrusted with a lot of power, which means they should practice some sense of judgment and discretion in these things. The moment they don't practice discretion or judgment and become nakedly political, whether for a political agenda or an ethnic agenda, then they no longer have any legitimacy and they need to be removed and their offices need to be changed because the agency needs to go because you cannot trust it. And there was a time, something like the FBI, the Justice Department, there was a degree of professionalism and they'd have at least to give lip service and pretext to the rule of law. So this limited them in their abuses in many respects. They had to do everything sort of secretly. Now they're not. And so they have, I think, kind of crossed the Rubicon here. It's a question of degree that makes a big difference in everyone's lives. And now they're going after people for cracking jokes on the internet, and they're not embarrassed about going into court, nor do they anticipate or expect a judge to shut them down, which should happen here, or a jury should shut them down, you know.
Matt Taibbi mentioned this last week, that he said, you know, something is going on. He was alluding to the idea that there is a transition in the political and judicial system of America.
Well, we see it with those appointees that Senator Kennedy embarrasses when he asks them basic questions about the Constitution. They can't answer. They have no knowledge of the Constitution or civics for that matter. They can't answer law 101 questions about the Constitution. And they're the ones presiding over some of these cases. You know, and some of these people are Republican appointees. So I don't want to make this judge.
But Taibbi's point is that there is a transition to a dictatorship. I mean, that's really what he's
they're rubber stamping the abuses of the Justice Department for one reason or another.
Yeah.
You know? Just like this judge in the Proud Boy case. I was reading about the Proud Boy case, and you know, this is what they're charged. They're charged with the forceful attempt to prevent the peaceful transition of presidential power. That's what they're charged with. But there were none of the defendants were armed, nor are they charged with assault. So what force was being applied to prevent the peaceful transition? Then to say, well, there's an insurrection. No, you used that word. What evidence of an insurrection was there? People were getting raucous, even breaking windows. It's not an insurrection. It's not a challenge to governmental power. If anything, they had assembled there to provide a protest for a legal challenge to the Electoral College being certified by the Congress, being counted in. There were some real problems with the 2020 election. Then they turned it into this riot, probably at the behest of various informants or assets of the FBI. That's what the evidence seems to suggest. And as we know, with the release of the January 6th security tapes, the claim that there was a riot or an insurrection is absurd. The QAnon shaman, he's been released now, and they're trying to extend. Nevertheless, this narrative of insurrection pervades the court. I mean, there's no reality to it. There's no reality. It's just an assertion. Well, narrative.
They're trying to transition to a dictatorship without having the public be aware of the existence of a secret society that is manipulating the culture, the media, the judicial system, the government, to a dictatorship. This is why these things are occurring, and in the way they're occurring. They don't want the public to ask the simple question of who is creating this agenda. I mean, this is the thing that they just cannot have people start thinking about, because this is obviously not some evil people or greedy people or stupid people who are making mistakes or trying to grift a few million dollars. I mean, this is an organized agenda. So therefore, who is creating the agenda and for what reason? This is what you have to kind of get past the clown word aspect of all this to the more and serious and real point, is that the responsibility of the independent media is to take these events and not engage in this distraction aspect of, does Trump really have, legal issues here or something like that. You have to try to transition people to the idea that this is an agenda. There's the really clearest way right now is, I think, the transgender agenda that came out of nowhere, and they're trying to basically transition American culture to inculcate you know, our transgender repressed, I guess almost majority, but it's a big, but, you know, Biden gave the, a speech, issued a proclamation, you know, and I'll read what he said. He said that transgender Americans shape our nation's soul, proudly serving in the military, curing deadly diseases, holding elected offices, running thriving businesses, fighting for justice, raising families, and much more.
What diseases are they curing?
Well, you know, the thing is that this would be like in the Vaughn.
I'm sorry, there's some training work in a lab somewhere that does like research.
I mean, if you actually got into
armed services, are they at the front lines?
And give us, Joe, the citation for these individuals. We would like to interview them. He goes, today too many transgender Americans are still denied rights and freedom. A wave of discriminatory state laws is targeting transgender youth, terrifying families and hurting
terrifying kids. Families.
Right. And are not hurting anyone. So anyway, so the thing is that this is, obviously it is a hallucination, right? I mean,
aren't all laws discriminatory in some fashion?
Oh, I mean, how else can they function as well?
Yeah, these words.
It's like, right. But the idea that, you know, that there is a group of transgenders that have shaped our soul, that have proudly served in the military and have cured deadly diseases, and I mean, running thriving businesses. I mean, first of all, you have to actually look at the raw numbers. I mean, just like we like to know what the real data is in terms of this transgender community, because I've talked to a couple doctors now about this who have urology is the best place if you want to get data about this. People have worked in hospitals and they can tell you it is the rarest phenomena imaginable. It isn't one in 10,000. I mean, historically, it's like one in 100,000. So it isn't a group that there should be anything other than a medical response and you know, perhaps some kind of social support. But certainly not the idea of turning it into the soul of America, right? This is just arithmetically impossible. Moreover, you have the transgenders now who are being created out of a culture which has nothing to support it, right? It's just like Biden's statement, it's just made out of hot air. And then you have the issue of the toxicity. Is that you have so much damage to particularly male, but female too. You know, that we are all being damaged by the toxicity so that we have low testosterone, low sperm count. These things can play into a homosexual, creating a homosexual male. And from there, if the culture is correct, you can push him into this new transgender. So I would say, what Biden's statement is, it's not a description of history. That this is ludicrous. It is a vision of the future, right? This is really what it is. By putting this statement out, he's telling, he's normalizing these ideas so that as they transition us into transgender humans, there will be cultural support, right? So, and people will not say, why is this happening? Who is behind this, you see? Now, a few shows ago, you pointed out that if you separated from the financial support for the transgender movement in the United States, if you separated out agencies and groups that are primarily Jewish, there wouldn't be much left, right? So what I think a kind of a straightforward understanding of Biden's vision statement here is that it is part of the project that, you know, can be at least identified as having a sort of an origination with the authoritarian personality, where they said, you know, we're going to use Eros as propaganda to reshape the European mind. So This is the step with which they are actually moving beyond pornography into straight forward transhumanism, because even though they are, you know, promoting the transgender as the epitome of humanity, you have to remember that the transgender is a kind of transhuman, right? It isn't an actual normal biological person. When they get done with this individual, when they get done with the hormone therapy and the surgery, they have created a, they are into the world now of transhumanism. So I would just, you know, point out that people need to, when they encounter this in the public schools or in a political forum, they just need to stand their ground and say, you know, we need to have two conversations first. We need to have conversation about toxicity, about what is damaging our bodies. Is there a relationship between the low sperm counts, the catastrophically low testosterone, and the you know, the ascendancy, statistical ascendancy of homosexuality, which then even goes further into the transgender. So that's the first thing. And then the second thing is back to what I was just saying, is that agenda. Who would want to promote this as a vision of America's future? Is there something malevolent? Is there something undisclosed, right? Is there something they're not telling us about why they want to take us into a world where the transgender is the nation's soul, right? So this is really what parents and people in the political process of America now have to do, is they have to get these two elements into the public domain. If they do, if they just get, one leads into the other, but if they can get people to question that, if this could be an agenda, this could be someone who, or a group that has an idea that is malevolent, that it's not disclosed to us, right, why they're doing this, I think that we can easily defeat this and use it as part of the way to get more Americans to be aware of a group that is in the government controlling it, that's creating these bizarre legal things that we have to deal with in terms of Biden and Trump and all this. But this is an agenda. It is an agenda of a certain group. And this is really what I hope, you know, comes out of this, is because, sorry to be long-winded, but because it is so obviously an agenda, it obviously comes out of just nothingness. So what is the purpose for all that?
Well, it's clear why would Bud Light feature the trans guy Dylan Mulvaney promoting their beer? People who drink Budweiser wouldn't think would be interested in transgendered, you know, females. They're losing a lot of money there. Just last year, when, you know, this is the Anheuser-Busch company promoting, you know, gay pride for their beer, and you walk in a grocery store and there's their beer is colored with rainbows. Like, that's not a marketing. It doesn't make any sense from a financial standpoint. No, it does make a sense from a sort of, like you said, a sort of a cultural programming, social engineering scheme. And this is why it does the transgenderism. Gets support from the highest echelons of society. These billionaire philanthropists, mostly Jewish, like the Pritzkers, I think Martin Rosenblatt, who started SiriusXM. He's one that said that I think the transhuman, that transgenderism is the on-ramp to transhumanism. They actually said that it's a precursor to a superhuman, whatever that is. So you have this sort of this techno megalomania that's in back of this. That suffered also sort of with the Tikkun Olam, the Jewish revolution, subversive penchant they have for subversive, you know, undermining society, you know, destroying identity. So there's sort of a global marketing angle to this, all toward, you know, it's global homo, getting rid of all obstacles. And of course, getting rid of identity, you get rid of national identity, ethnic identity, you get rid of someone's even sexual identity. So you're just a blob and there to manipulate. And of course, all this money going to finance it, these organizations. It takes a lot of money to do this, to fund these clinics, to marketing ads, and also to bribe the politicians, to blackmail the politicians like Biden. Of course, Biden himself is a puppet because he's surrounded by a bunch of Jews in his administration. They're pushing this stuff. They're advocates of this. We've talked in the past about all the Jewish organizations that are promoting transgenderism, all the foundation money. It is almost exclusively Jewish. Call them out on that. Why would they do this? Well, because it's way to, further destabilize society, do away with one thing is Christianity, of course, is a big obstacle to this. And that's a big target here. That's one thing. We had this recent shooting down there in Tennessee, Nashville, Tennessee.
Yes.
A 28-year-old woman who allegedly was identifying as a male went in and shot six people. She was reportedly killed by police officers. Dispatched her. But she herself supposedly was a transgendered male, identified as such. She was apparently a former student of the place, maybe 16, 17 years before, which is a little girl, almost 20 years ago, more than that. Her motivations, well, this was a school that was Christian and didn't promote that. Now, they're claiming that it was resentment. Plus, the police chief down there said she was motivated by resentment. What resentment does she have towards this Christian institution? Just that, well, because it doesn't conform to the transgender ideology. And a lot of this is because transgendered people are being told that they're targets or victims of violence. They're just a day away from being genocided. Of course, you know, you're not an ethnicity if you're transgendered, but they equate laws restricting cross hormone treatment for children, sex change operations for children. They're equating that with denying medical care. And that's your Biden administration. These are part of the discriminatory laws that the Biden administration was talking about. Laws explicitly prohibiting a drag queen story hour or the grooming of children or the chemical sterilization or the physical mutilation of children under the cover of gender affirming care, as they call it. But there's a lot, I think many states, many as 20, are passing laws against this, and it's a rising tide, a grassroots opposition to this stuff, as you think it would as this agenda moves forward, because people become aware of it, then most people are simply repulsed by it. And so they're forced to do something. And now the state legislatures are responding by passing these laws. And then oddly enough, the media blames the laws for this massacre when obviously this woman was deranged. And she was also probably riled up and instigated by all this propaganda, largely from the Biden administration.
Well, that's
by the media, you know.
That's the key point, is that you're looking at the result of all of the brainwashing that this individual has been subjected to. And then they say, well, the individual had almost a reason to behave like this, right?
Yeah, that's suggested, yes. Yeah. The one thing they said, there are seven victims, including her.
Yeah.
No, she's the assailant. Right. And one thing I think just part of this, we're living in an age of delusion and lies. The police chief down there is awkwardly trying to explain who did it and identify her. Of course, the what really got the media upset was the New York Times apologized for misgendering her. That's the big issue here. You know, she was a male, but the police chief said, we believe she identified as a male when she was doing the shooting. So we're living in a post-truth, post-reality society, which is the bigger issue here, I guess you could say.
Yeah, they're breaking our minds by shattering what is self-evident and what is real. And this is all ending up, I don't know when, 100 years from now, with a completely transgender society is stratified, where biological sex would be only for the controllers, and underneath would be different varieties of sex slaves.
Well, right? She was very obviously very confused. And what confused her? Well, 20 years of social media. This was a 28. She's a does that make her a millennial or Generation Z? I don't know. But she grew up on social media and all that confusion, all that ideology and all that. She was obviously groomed by somebody. And in an earlier age, when there was a more of a certainty to life and roles in life, and particularly sex roles, she would have been guided in a much more productive and healthy way. Like at 28, she already might have a couple children and a husband, and having all the problems associated with that and all the pleasures associated with that. Instead, she was living like a almost like a perverse Peter Pan syndrome, from what I understand. Her room was a mess, no direction in life. Why is that? I saw a picture of her when she was a little girl, and even when she was a female, I mean, when she was looking, dressing like a female, not a beauty pageant winner, but definitely someone who could have had a family. And, you know, and what drove her to this? What drives all these people? All these people are victims in a way, as disgusting as they are. But they, these people are what they call janissaries or tranissaries for the regime. They're creating these people in droves now with the perverse society they've created through multimedia, through the with the control of electronic media. And we talk about the groups that are doing this. Hollywood does this. These foundations do this. The school system does this, all at the behest of these Jewish foundations and funding. And we have to call them out for this. They're responsible for this. And they're creating all these individuals. And you're wondering, you can't promote mental illness and expect people not to act insane. And all these things are promoting mental illness when they're promoting this ideology. And they've created schools as grooming centers for these things. Marjorie Taylor Greene was recently on 60 Minutes. I was watching parts of the Leslie Stahl interview with her. Leslie Stahl says, you're accusing Democrats of grooming children and they're pedophiles. And then she cites some specifics, and Leslie Stahl goes, wow, it has no response to it. Have you seen the books they're showing kids?
Right.
Gay BC. And one was actually literal cartoons for first graders. We actually have cartoons of people engaging in sexual intercourse, engaging in sodomy. And this is being presented right. to children. This is what's happening.
So, I mean, Stahl was just stymied. And this should be that moment where you present what's real. And the person who has the illusion of the persecuted transgender is stymied. You see, this was
that. Well, you saw that thing that they're saying. Remember, they said Saturday was supposed to be the day of vengeance.
Yeah.
What are you avenging? Oh, because we're being genocided. No, you're not. I mean, yeah, you have a very high suicide rate, but from suicide, you do it yourself, and there was a reason why you commit suicide, because you're mentally ill and you've ruined your life, and now you're faced with that. And you have no outlet for that, because society isn't directing you in a proper moral way. You're going against nature. But it turns out, of course, that these, you know, I think 36 in 2021, like 35 or 36 were murdered, transgendered people. Okay. It turns out, you know, 20 of the assailants were black men. Well, the reason why that is because these are prostitutes.
Yeah.
John finds out who they are and they kill them. They're involved in drugs. They get stabbed and a very violent life. They have screwed up lives. But it's not as if white Christians are going out and killing them. In fact, if anything, they want to stay away from them. But the media creates an image as if they're being targeted by white Christians, you know. And so then again, someone like her will get up, provoked by this propaganda, and do something like this. Now, was she on any treatments? Was she on any SSRIs? Was she getting any cross, you know, hormone therapy like testosterone? That'll drive you nuts too. You know, what's in her manifesto? For some reason, they don't publish a manifesto, whereas the guy up in, you know, guy up in Buffalo last year, they published a manifesto because it had something to do with the Great Replacement. So they could pin it on something.
They have two things. They have hot air, right? Mm-hmm. And they have intimidation. Remember John Stewart talking about gun violence, saying the leading cause of death for children are guns. Remember that statement?
Yeah, yeah.
And forgetting to define what he meant by children, because he was including everyone under 18, and the category that he really needed to actually clarify what he's saying was young gang members who have handguns. Get in gunfights. So you see, his use of the word children was sophistry, and this is, you know,
their argument is like, why are you passing laws against giving kids lap dances, with trannies giving kids lap dances at libraries and reading books to them, when their kid's being shot. Well, first of all, they're two separate issues. So I guess we could address the gun control issue at another time. Let me address the grooming of children at the public libraries and public schools, yeah. John, before you go off on it.
Right. So this is, you know, again, the mainstream media, so-called, is a cesspool. It is a propaganda device. Everything that comes through it is filtered. And you have to just be aware of that. I try to just absolutely reduce my participation in it to just the, you know, the absolute smallest degree that I'm able to get away with. There's plenty of ways to get information. There are reasonably good websites that are, you know, will more or less, you know, present stories as they come out that are important in a timely fashion. You just can't watch CNN or these things they're sort of like the FBI. They've lapsed into almost a decadent phase at this point where they just don't have anything other than propaganda. And so it's just not good to experience that. And on the other side, you need to go to independent media sources to get the information to be able to deal with the nonsense that comes at you. You know, if you're up against someone who's using John Stewart's argument, just to give an example, mm-hmm. if you know what the statistic he's referring to, then you can just cut him off at the knees, right? And so this is the thing, is that you in the political sense, you just can't have too much information, and you really need to know where to get it, and how to use it. So you know, then this goes to you know, how to respond in terms of family and culture. It just goes to radical localism. Everyone needs to, who understands that what is going on, what they're experiencing, has to commit themselves to really passionate participation in local politics. Every single political position has to be fought for and won by people who are part of, you know, European culture. Mm-hmm. You just can't let a dog catcher, any of them, because they'll use every single office.
Oh yeah, schools. I mean, look what they've done with public schools. You have teachers now; they have no business being within 100 yards of a school.
Exactly. And even if your kid is home being homeschooled, you still have to try to control the school board at the public school.
Well, because you got to live with those kids that go there.
You have to live with those kids, right? And exactly right. So you just have to commit yourself with everything you've got, with time, energy, and money, to make sure that the local political positions, sheriff, supervisor, mayor, councilman, school board members, every single position that you can has to be fought for. And you really need to look at where you're living, because when you're in large Soros DA zones, you really don't have much of a chance of organization. So the first thing is move, and then to pick your location carefully. And then once you have found a place that is, you know, has 50% sanity, move there and then just fight like crazy.
Any DA elected who accepted Soros funding directly or indirectly should be expelled from office because he's an agent of foreign subversion.
Of course.
It's as simple as that. If you, you know, that's the first right there. And that's, you see that in how they execute their office. They're not there to enforce the law; they're to subvert the law and undermine society. So they're a subversive agent.
Tim, it's not theoretical to me. I mean, 100 miles from where I live, I think Thursday, LA is going to, the supervisors are going to be considering one of the decarceration laws, which would make it impossible to arrest anyone for things like carrying firearms, domestic violence, possession of child pornography, mm-hmm. burglary, robbery, or even assault in some cases. So, and they're trying to shut down the Men's Central Jail in downtown Los Angeles because there was 3 fatalities in it. Though These are almost certainly fentanyl overdose victims, but nevertheless, they're all, you know, excited about the fact that in the county jail, you know, there was these fatalities, so they have to shut it down. This is the same law that in Chicago led to, what was it, like 300%? I don't have the data in front of me, but just spectacular increase in crime. And of course, the decarceration laws, which are, it'll be coming to every large city. Believe me, this is a, you know, organized agenda, will basically decivilize these zones, right? I mean, think about what the long-term effect of such a law would be. I mean, all small business would have to leave. There would be no one left in these cities after a few years other than criminals and drug addicts being supported by a welfare state and only used for stuffing the ballot box for the Democratic Party. That's what they're only.
Well, they got to preserve the sacred right to vote by stuffing the ballot box.
Yeah, that's right. So this is this, you know, hopefully, you know, I mean, sad comment, but hopefully they don't spread out into the suburbs, the decarceration individuals, right? Because, you know, I mean, this is really the end of the road for civilization. If these laws stand, these areas will not even be recognizable at the low level of culture that they are now in like 3 or 4 years. Believe me, there will be, you know, it'd be like Escape from New York kind of.
You build these massive cities and they create, they become these babbles. The only way to maintain any order in a diverse and rich setting is to have sort of a pseudo police state anyway, like New York had in the 90s, right? Yeah. Up until fairly recently. But areas, you simply have a large police presence. They don't put up with anything. Then the moment that's let down, then you have anarchy, because you really cannot have law and order unless the people themselves practice internal order. And even internal chaos, you can't have law and order. You can't have public order. And we have a political class and a media structure, entertainment structure, which is dedicated to promoting internal chaos. We had a recent kind of related topic is this thing, the law that's being proposed, the bill to go after TikTok, ban TikTok. They call it digital fentanyl. Yeah. In many ways, it's true, but they're going after TikTok because it's owned by a Chinese parent company. And apparently it's somehow BitDance, I think. Somehow it poses a threat to national security. Now, I don't know about, you know, getting data off some 14-year-old's phone represents a threat to national security, but nevertheless, it's used as an excuse to go after them. Now, of course, this has been an excuse to create a very vague law that can pretty use to criminalize the downloading of apps and the use of these apps, and also the use of VPNs. They're trying to criminalize that. If you use a VPN to download a banned app, you can go to jail for 20 years. So this is sort of like a Patriot Act type thing they're trying to do. Now, of course, I don't know what actual threat that TikTok presents to national security or how it is any different than Google or Facebook, you know, or YouTube or any other of these social media apps that are owned by these giant corporations, transnational corporations that are controlled by Unit 8200 in Israel. So it is interesting. They're worried about the Chinese Communist Party, but no one talks about Israel and Unit 8200 in its relation to Google and Facebook and virtual every tech, high tech or communication company in the United States. But it's interesting. I was watching Tucker Carlson, and he was talking about TikTok and how he suggested that the Chinese may be undermining the United States by promoting degeneracy on TikTok. I said, the Chinese?
Yeah.
Really, well, the Chinese?
He's absolutely right. And TikTok does, I mean, it creates.
But it's not the Chinese that are doing it.
Of course not. I mean, well, I was going to say is that, I mean, I'm glad he finally noticed this because we've had 20 years of Pornhub.
Yes.
The internet has been, I mean, what the statistics are, you know, reasonably consistent.
You can ban TikTok if you can have the technical capability to ban TikTok in the United States, then you could ban pornography.
Right. There you go.
Because an algorithm can do that.
Right. If you have a half of the internet usage being, you know, pornographic in nature, I think you have a problem culturally. So, you know, Carlson's comments, I mean, he's right, but he's just a little late to the party.
Well, political satire can put you in jail for 10 years, but you can stream, you can broadcast pornography, you know, unrestricted.
You know, it's, I just give a little cultural bonbon. I've noticed that some women are, they've made this position that they want the person that, a male, that they're going to date to basically swear or assert that they're not a blogger, that they won't end up with their sex life either described verbally or visually on the internet. Because it's become so common now. If you look at TikTok, it's just so routine that obviously women who are, you know, thinking about a long-term relationship eventually, they can understand that these pornographic episodes that get online, even if it was just, you know, a one-time situation, this could follow them forever. This could be something that could really interfere with their ability to create a family. And so I'm glad to see this. This is long overdue. There should be kind of like a prenup to dating at this point, wherein you just have an agreement to not have anything which would end up on the internet that occurs between you. You can see that the internet has really been something that's been inserted between men and women ultimately, because you know, you pornography is just like a, you know, it just cuts right through relationships. And so this is like a good thing. There should be, you know, people really need to have relationships that are from the very beginning have the expectation of privacy, that this is just going to be something that is between the two of us and we're not going to put it on the internet. So I'm glad that this is happening. And again, this is the kind of extreme localism. This would be something that kind of culture could be developed, you know, in a small town. I mean, people should have, they should have public meetings about this in towns, about, you know, we really want to have a future for this town. We want to have real relationships created. There is this problem, this internet problem of pornography. How can we give information to, you know, people who are entering into, you know, the age where romance could begin, give them the tools. I mean, you see my point. Instead of, you know, drag queen story hour, you really need to be giving kids what they need is a wholesome romance story hour. You see what I mean? This is what children should be exposed to. When you expose them to drag queens, I mean, you know,
what possible? I mean, I'm sorry. What possible benefit could be imagined by doing that to a child? It's obviously grooming.
You have to remember this. The question is not.
Which is bizarre to begin with.
But the question is, why does a drag queen want to get in front of children and talk about his sex life?
Yes.
What is the purpose for that individual? That individual has only one purpose: to normalize his overly sexualized culture or to groom kids for his ultimate satisfaction. Mm-hmm. So this is, you know, when this is basically a federal mandate to permit these things, parents looking forward to, you know, the possibility and the hope for producing children who can carry on with, you know, our biology, our ancestry, our ethnicity, our culture, they have to find a way to separate them. Because you can see what I mean, that the damage is being done. Even if the kid, you know, you come home, you talk to him, now the drag queen, it's this, you know, the damage is being done. Just
because any serious adult, and of course serious adult, hearing or reading the president's proclamation on drag on transgender visibility, you hear those words or you read them and you go, what the hell is this guy talking about? This guy's a doddering fool. Who gave him this script? It's absurd. I mean, the fact that this is supposedly the president, you know, this is the president of the United States, supposedly he's an influential man, a serious job, important job, and he's saying these words. And this gets vetted and the White House releases this. And it's
this is America's vision statement at this point. And I wish that when he read his proclamation of our future, and he talked about the transgender, you know, serving the military, curing deadly diseases, raising families, fighting for justice, he also would have included in drinking light beer.
Is it any wonder they have a problem recruiting for the military now?
Well, yeah, I mean, because that would have, like, you know, reduced it to a level that, and everyone could see that this was just a, you know, an absurdity, and to start them thinking about, well, what is in back of this? Who is in back of this? You know, you mentioned the military. You know, you're watching this absolute debacle in the Ukraine, of just NATO's, you know, proxy army being slaughtered by the Russians, and I've listened to a number of people who've done good analytic work on this, you know, who kind of know the numbers of the thing. And the thing that's so amazing to me is how not just deindustrialized Europe and the United States are, but how demasculinized. Mm-hmm. They're saying they can't even get 50,000 American fighting men into the field. I mean, this was from Colonel Douglas McGregor, who I think is a very clear-minded individual. And he just said, look, you know, all of this, you know, like, you know, Lindsey Graham talking about, you know, like landing on the beach, you know, and invading. I mean, he's just smoking dope, because the military is so weak at this point. You know, and then, of course, there's also, because of the deindustrialization, you can't really produce the kind of, you know, munitions you need to fight a conventional war. I was listening to the German defense minister saying they're not going to give any more, you know, armaments and tanks and whatnot to the Ukraine. And he made a statement that was just amazing to me. He said, even if we accelerate our production, it will take us to 2030 to have our preparedness back to the level it was before we started giving all this stuff to Ukraine. So Europe has been like America, you know, we've been deindustrialized. We swapped out the hardcore industries to Asia. We have financialization, you know, what Hollywood, Silicon Valley, and we can't make these basic things. And of course, even if we could, Tim, who's going to run the factories? Where you look at TikTok, it's the most depressing thing imaginable. It's not like they say, well, Chinese are subverting America. Tim, that's already over with. It's over. This is just a visualization of the complete destruction of the American being, because the kids who are on these things are just abhorrent. They are so degenerate, and there are just thousands of them. And so it must be, this is really the kind of culture.
Well, it's self-evident. It's obvious if you produce a medium like this and you just unleash it on children, it's going to ruin them.
Yeah.
You know, and so why is it allowed? Like, I mean, they're banning TikTok for the wrong reason, not the Chinese Communist Party I'm worried about. With right. TikTok, it's right. Well, again, and no one talks about Unit 8200 and Google and YouTube and these things, other social media influences, Grindr and all these dating apps. And again, why is the world so awash in porn? No one's going to argue that's healthy. They'll say that it's fun, you know, whatever, it's enjoyable, it just satisfies your passions or your appetites, but it's not healthy. No mature adult says you should be able to satisfy whatever appetite or whatever desire you want at any given moment. That's not a responsible way to live, and that's self-evident. But they've created this. Now, why are they creating this media? Like I said, if they could have an algorithm that could just ban pornography and criminalize. If you produce it and distribute it, you get charged.
Of course.
Like I said, we live in a society where that's protected by the First Amendment, which isn't political speech, but political speech or political satire is criminalized. It's again, yet another satanic inversion we're seeing here. By the usual suspects.
These things are so undemocratic. I mean, it's like who voted in the transgender cultural mean, to the visioning of America as a transgender nation? Where was this in democracy? Where did the American people get a chance to like check the ballot box, you know, for, well, yeah, I really want the country to become a nation of transgenders.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, this is all obviously subtly hoisted on us through intimidation. You know, it's all of the different structures so that people can't think or talk or speak out. They just accept. Well, I'm afraid we just can't any longer. You know, it's just there because as that individual pointed out, it is, they're talking about a superhuman. Well, that's what they want to call it. It's a super slave that they're creating, not a superhuman. The transgender have a very high fraction of autistic in the groups that are transitioning.
Well, that's more part that speaks to the toxicity, right?
Well, and also to the feeble mind.
Yeah.
You know, these people are not of strong intellectual power. They have been, you know, disabled. And I hate to say it, but I often point out that the revolution begins with your body. If your testosterone is low, you just get it up. You need that for clear-mindedness. There are normal levels of biological activity in males and females, and you know, do blood work, make sure you stay within these zones. And it isn't that hard. Well, it is. You need planning, and actually you need the resources to do it. But it's very possible to reverse that and to move in the right direction. You just have to stop eating poison.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you talked about this was a plan and agenda, and you referred to the authoritarian personality. The authoritarian personality, basically it comes down to is promoting Eros or sexuality or uninhibited sexuality to weaken the family, to weaken the father figure, break up the nuclear family so everyone's vulnerable. Because by their definition, if you have grew up in a stable family with a father figure, an authoritarian figure, and a nurturing mother, you're a fascist or a budding fascist.
Right.
Because this gets implemented, of course, in the ensuing decades through the entertainment, media, academia. But we have the in 1969, you have the Planned Parenthood's Jaffe memo where they plan to curb the American population through promoting abortion on demand, increasing homosexuality. So God isn't making them that way. Society is making them that way. And of course, you increase the rates of homosexuality and other sexual dysfunctions and confusion through creating trauma in youth. And of course, young people are more vulnerable in broken homes. And they promoted that. And so that's, you have that plan is of course apparently implemented. But the thing is, the whole transgender gay rights thing, feminism, is all done under the banner of liberation, right? The civil rights language of liberation. And they adopt the language of that, but they talk about genocide and oppression and these things. And so, but it's interesting because they're just adopting sort of the language of the Jewish benefactors. And so the same narcissism and paranoia is sort of reflected in these groups like feminism or Black Lives Matter or gay rights organizations or transgender organizations. But really, what it really is it's sort of they're using the language of liberation. It's really an agenda. It's sort of a corporate business agenda.
Yeah, it's cultural and biological destruction camouflages civil rights.
That's where all the billionaires support, all these degenerate billionaires.
Yeah, yeah, and then I just wanted to circle back to our original topic, Trump and Stormy Daniel.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, think of how, as a news story, that will affect young people, right? And so this is a good example of why you just want to get rid of the mainstream media, just openly get rid of it. Because think of the Monica Lewinsky Clinton fiasco, mm-hmm. and think of how destructive the stories were on, you know, pubescent males, particularly as they were, you know, trying to transition into the potential for romance.
Yeah, and this is the MTV generation.
Exactly. Yeah. And they had that story, you know, it was basically dominated the news for, you know, a year. And then immediately after that, you get into, you know, MTV. And then, of course, you're right, you're moving toward Pornhub. So the people were being manipulated, you know, the young people were being manipulated. And just as an example, if the parents had said, you know, we're not going to watch the news or permit it in this house because it's degenerate, and only, you know, got their news through some newspaper that they could vet before the kid, you know, was exposed to it, the child would have been much better off psychologically. It would have been better off than being exposed to what was being presented as a national crisis, right? But was actually just pornography in disguise. Mm-hmm. That's all it really was. And that's why the thing with Trump and Stormy Daniels is so suspicious to me. In fact, it's just obvious to me that this is really what it's for. It's just, you know, it's just a way to grease the skids to transgenderism, basically, because that's really where pornography ends up. You know, you create enough Eros propaganda, and then you start getting, you know, well, why not have, you know, more fun by being polysexual? Mm-hmm. And since you're polysexual, well, why not just admit it, come out of the closet, and make the transition to transvestitism? And then from there, you're just well on your way to fully transhuman. So, I mean, it just seems like it's a good idea to keep these ideas out of kids' minds, if possible, just with an absolute, you know, partition to mainstream media. It's just a cesspool at this point.
Well, again, this is we saw like down in Nashville, Tennessee with Audrey Hale. She's a perfect example, you know, of a janissary or a transversary for the system. That's a part of bio-Leninism, where they, you know, they high low against the middle, the normal middle, the stable middle. And that's why you have billionaires supporting, promoting this degeneracy. The talk of victimization that we hear, which is, again, evidently apparent in this case, is because driven by social media and also the promotion of sort of sexual fetishes or fixations. And what we have now in American society is the promotion of victim as status, ironically. So there's a desire of many young Americans, particularly white Americans, to seek out victim status and thus attain moral superiority and be a victim. That's because that's what you want to be in the 21st century, of course. So it appears like, so the trans community is obviously, is very quick to violence, which isn't talked about much. We have that t-shirt, was it transgender rights or else? That was a t-shirt that was being sold. NPR recently made a piece talking about how they're being armed for what? And this is a response for legislation that's merely preventing the chemical sterilization, poisoning, and also the mutilation of children and the grooming of children. They want children for some reason.
Look at calling the day, you know, the
day of vengeance. Yeah.
The day of vengeance. I mean, where does this come from? Then this is obviously programming, in the same way they program black males to be violent, they're programming the transgender to be violent.
So if you're inventing a victim category that appeals to people who are already mentally unstable, and why are they mentally unstable? Like, why are they marginal? Well, let's talk about that, the past 25, 30 years of media programming. But then getting them excited, pumping them up with claims that they're confronted with genocide, and then urging them to take arms, right, against supposed persecution, you're creating a very volatile situation. At the same time, you're denying protections, status and protection to Christians, which apparently the Biden administration is doing. When they wouldn't even mention, they identify, I think, Jean-Pierre, whatever name, Claire Jean, whatever prayer, says that our hearts go out to the trans community. Well, wait a second. It was the six people were killed, Christians and three children, six adults. Why would you? Because they're worried about a reaction, a negative reaction. It's like, what? I mean, and no one, again, even the corporate campaign, Amazon reassured the trans community of their support. Well, wait a second. Usually when there's a victim, there's an assurance that your hearts go out to the victim. Like, why wasn't there a call to go out to like Nashville's Christian community? Well, because those in control don't take very kindly to Christianity.
Second-class citizens.
Yes, that's what they've created. Yeah. But you create, again, if you want to, your sister, where you're promoting mental illness and violence, don't be surprised if something like this happens. And again, not saying this is indicative of a wider problem. I'm just saying, I'm just applying the same rule. We've had the past year and a half, there have been, four mass shootings involving trans people? Now, if there were, again, there were four mass shootings the past 18 months involving white nationalists or identified white nationalists or Nazis or Christians, boy, I mean, Merrick Garland, we're all over it, right? FBI investigating it to be parents just have to go to a school board meeting and voice opposition to CRT training and trans stuff in the schools, and the FBI will investigate them as potential domestic terrorists, right?
That's our world, Tim.
Yeah. So topsy-turvy, upside down. But the thing is, again, the fact that there's so much opposition to it now with this various states passing these laws, which I think is a trend now, I think.
Yeah, 20 states.
Yeah, 20 states and probably growing.
More on the way, yeah. So this is, thank heavens, you know.
Yeah. So, okay, Joe.
Tim, we'll get them next week, buddy.
Take care. Good night.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.